The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the December 2017 issue and the January issue 2018 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. It can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. We're going to continue the December 2017 issue, first beginning with Who's Who on page 8, and our last line there. We have Chris Davis, left fielder at Oakland Athletics. His height is 5'10". His weight is 195 pounds. He was born December 21st, 1987, in Lakewood, California. Davis was second in the American League in home runs, 43 this year, and had a career-high 110 RBIs and 140 hits, including 28 doubles. He was traded from the Brewers to the A's in early 2016 and proceeded to hit 42 home runs that season to become the fifth Oakland player to reach 40 homers. He also led the A's in runs, 85 hits, 137, and RBIs, 102. A two-time All-Arizona player of the Deer Valley High, Davis hit 16 home runs to help Cal State Fullerton make the 2009 College World Series. Now on to page 52. From the pages of Sports Illustrated, Jamal Crawford has been in the NBA since the turn of the century. He just joined his seventh franchise and is playing for his 18th coach. And he spent his summer running and starring in his own tournament. Why? Well, when you have a bottomless passion for the game, all you want to do is hoop. Last of the ballers. Fashion plates. On opening night with his new team, Crawford went not balding head to balding, head with another ageless wonder, Manu Ginobili, who at 40 is still the NBA's second oldest player. Shut me down, shut me down. Jamal Crawford stares at the sideline incredulous. It is August on the outskirts of Seattle. In a few months, Crawford will debut for the Minnesota Timberwolves, his seventh team in 18 NBA seasons, expected to do what he's always done, get irrationally hot, irrationally fast. But for now, on a summer Sunday night in a half-empty college gym that smells of hot dogs and sweat, he is playing for pride. Still, this is his turf, his pro-am, in fact, the appropriately named crossover. And some guy on the opposing bench has the temerity to suggest that Crawford can be locked up because, why? He's too old? Washed up? If this were 20 years ago, it would be on. Back then, Crawford lived to embarrass defenders. Didn't matter who, where, or when. Blow past you and Crawford might instead pull it back or so he could cross you over a second time. No one was off limits. When he was a 16-year-old at Rainier Beach High, the Supersonics invited him to an open run, even though he looked 13 and weighed 140. Jamal? He dribbled down in transition, saw Detlef Schrempf, three-time NBA All-Star, Detlef Schrempf, pride of Seattle's Detlef Schrempf, and, I can't even articulate what he did. Sonics assistant Steve Gordon later told the San Jose Mercury News he basically broke Detlef's feet on half court. We thought Detlef was hurt. That's how Jamal rolled. But times have changed. Crawford is 37 now. He's made more than $100 million in the NBA. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody, especially some junior college nobody here in a gym full of old men with loud opinions. Besides, when you get to Crawford's age, you have to pace yourself. Adapt. Play the long game. Or at least that's what everyone tells him. Growing up, Crawford used to ask friends whose game his most resembled. They'd size him up, too tall and shot-happy to be a point guard, too skinny and herky-jerk to be a shooting guard, and say, nobody. And this broke his heart, because all he wanted to was to hear Penny Hardaway, or maybe Isaiah Thomas, or Allen Iverson. Two decades later, the 6'5" Crawford still doesn't play like anybody else, nor does anyone really play like him. He skips as much as runs, his dribble nearing chest high, where coaches teach you not to keep it. When he crosses over, he does so precipitously and with devastating speed. From afar, he appears to be all limbs upon which a giant round head bobs. He remains in demand. When Crawford became a free agent last summer, the Warriors recruited him. LeBron James called. Instead, Crawford signed for 2 years and $8.9 million with Minnesota, a promising team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2004, and whose coach Tom Thibodeau is known to be something of a stickler for defense, something that Crawford isn't fair to say is not. The match didn't seem to make a lot of sense, but as Crawford says, if I were at the point in my career where I was in my last year, then yeah, Cleveland or Golden State makes all the sense in the world. But I'm still in it for the chase and the journey. Furthermore, Crawford has spent his life confounding expectations. After all, who would have thought that of all the players in the 2000 draft class, Crawford would be the last man standing? He has never been an all-star, never played in the finals, and has started barely a third of all of his games. He's about to play for his 18th coach in 18 seasons, which, as he points out, literally might be a record. And yet he scored more points than Magic Johnson or Chris Mullin and sunk more threes than Iverson and Mark Price combined. His career has been both weird and wondrous. One of four men to score 50 for three different teams, the all-time leader in the four-pointers, and by a mile. Crawford has hit 50. J.J. Redick is second at 34. Steph Curry, the biggest threat to catch him, is at 20. The only three-time recipient of the Sixth Man of the Year award and the oldest player to earn one of the NBA's five major honors. He is not an easy man to define or to explain. One Western Conference GM gives it a shot, starting with the fact that Crawford remains a dangerous weapon. Everyone knows one of the worst things to happen to you is that guy makes two shots in a row, because then soon it's five or six. Still, says the GM, Crawford is not my type of player. He overhandles, too much one-on-one. And yet, the GM is also planning on offering Crawford a job the minute he retires, if he ever does. You know those guys who are just ballers, says the GM? Jamal is just a baller. He's the guy who organizes the games, and that's the reason for the reverence for him around the league. There aren't that many guys left like that. When Crawford broke into the league, he was cocky, too cocky. He cycled through agents. He harbored all-star aspirations. The league suggested otherwise. No one grows up wanting to be a sixth man, he says. That wasn't part of the deal. But above all, Crawford wanted to survive, so he reframed his dreams, became a killer off the bench, evolved into a valued teammate. With the Clippers, Austin Rivers needed encouragement. DeAndre Jordan needed tough love. Blake Griffin, a perfectionist, needed understanding. He was there for them all. Along the way, he was responsible for many memorable moments. Among them, on January 26th, 2007, Crawford and the Knicks were hosting the Heat at Madison Square Garden. Crawford missed his first four looks, including a dunk. And then, well, he can still recall the chronology. A three in front of our bench. And one. A pull-up mid-range. Then I got a steal and a David Lee bounce pass. Pretty soon, Crawford had made five consecutive shots. Then 10. His teammates began feeding him. I don't know where you were at mentally, Isaiah Thomas, New York coach, told him during a timeout, but wherever you are, stay there. By the time it was over, Crawford had made 16 in a row and scored 52 points. Miami star Dwayne Wade told him he'd never seen anything like it. To Crawford, it felt like, well, what does that feel like? Like I could kick it up there and it would go in. Like it doesn't matter where you are on the court. It doesn't matter who's there. You're just like, I'm in range, and let it go, and boom, it's gone. Like, you don't have to see the basket. There's no thought. It takes a certain type of player to pull this off, one who parries any dips in confidence by thinking to himself, as Crawford does, what would Iverson do, or what would Kobe Bryant do? explained Crawford of shooting one's way out of a slump. I would get mad if Kobe was like, I'm not going to shoot that much tonight. No, 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 no. That's your gift. The people want to see you do what you're going to do. To Rivers, the key to coaching Crawford lay in granting freedom. My thing was, why play Jamal if you're not going to give him the ball? That makes no sense. So he bestowed upon his reserve guard a permanent green light, believing that to even tell Crawford he'd taken a bad shot, and believe me, he took plenty, would be to reduce his effectiveness. Of course, this can't cut both ways. Many a fan has despaired upon seeing Crawford chuck up an early in the shot clock three on a night when he's not ensconced in the zone. Likewise, Crawford's skills don't necessarily translate to metrics. His career offensive rating, how much his team scores when he's on the court, may be gaudy, but he's still worse than his defensive rating, how many points his team allows. But to focus on such stats, Crawford says, is to miss the point. I'm not a fan of analytics. When I was a kid, I couldn't tell you what percentage Allen Iverson shot or Michael Jordan. Steph Curry is a bunch of people's favorite player, but they don't know what percentage he shot from the corner or above the break or whatever. They just know how they felt when he hit that shot and they were going crazy. That moment where they ran out the house yelling down the neighborhood, that's what it's about, the moments and memories. Crawford first played in the Seattle Pro-Am when he was 16. Doug Christie, the Raptors shooting guard, was running the league at the time, invited him to join his team. The first four games, Crawford barely shot. Then Christie turned his ankle. Crawford led the team in scoring and made the All-Star team. Every summer that 21 and counting, he's come back. In 2006, he took over the league and now runs it out of Seattle Pacific University. Admission is free, and Crawford estimates he spends $50,000 of his own money each summer. The first game on the night features Spencer Hawes and Mason Plumlee, two of dozens of pros Crawford has recruited. Let's see, says Vance Dawson, the enthusiastic PA announcer. Paul George blew it up. The line was out the door for Zach LaVine. KD could barely get back to his car. The list goes on. Bryant, Paul, Griffin, Isaiah Thomas, Nate Robinson, says Crawford. Since the Sonics left, this is the only way for kids around here to see NBA talent. After each game, Crawford takes up his position courtside to sign autographs and pose for photos. Dave, his buddy and de facto security man, lets everyone know that Jamal will stay as long as it takes. He doesn't want to be the figure you see just on TV, says Powell. I've literally seen him give the shoes off his feet and walk back in his socks to his car. Within a month, he'll be holed up in a hotel in San Diego and during Thibodeau's training camp. A month later, he will score 17 points and hit a huge last-minute three in Minnesota's home opener. But for now, he's still in Seattle, in his element. On this night, the semifinals of the playoffs, Crawford starts slowly, misses shots, lackluster D, 60, maybe 70% effort. But then a couple of calls go the other way, and a defender bodies him and he gets a bit chippy. Okay, a lot chippy. And now some chump is suggesting he can be shut down. Sure, training camp starts soon, and the smart thing would be to laugh it off, pace himself, but to suggest that Crawford spends even a nanosecond mired in internal debate would be wrong. There'd be no acceding to age or reason. No 60%. He claps for the ball, gets that high skip going, and so it begins. Catch, hesitation dribble, jumper, crossover, drive, and one. Shut me down? He yelled to the delight of the crowd. Now the old men are laughing, and kids are whooping, and Vance is bellowing. Jay crossover's on fire. And to be in the gym on this summer night, as Crawford does his thing, is to recognize how he means different things to different people. For some, he provides hope that we don't stop competing because we get old, but we get old because we stop competing. And if we can just return our joy for the game, perhaps we too can play forever. Never mind the venue. For others, he's the person we'd like to think we'd be if we became millionaire NBA stars. Proof that idols don't always let us down. But most of all, spinning down the court, trying out moves he makes up on the spot, he's a juking brain reminder why so many of us fell in love with the game. For those moments, and those memories. End zone, what's the call? Throw on a hop. The Cartersville Cappers are playing a baseball game against the Hilltown Highlanders under Major League Baseball rules. Cartersville reliever James Simon enters the game in the seventh inning with a runner on second base. Simon has an unusual delivery in which he hops with his pivot foot toward home plate before landing with his lead foot, dragging his pivot foot behind him. The Highlanders immediately call for a balk after Simon's first pitch. You're the umpire. What's the call? Here's the call. Simon has thrown a legal pitch. He can hop once as long as that step is part of his throwing motion, but he may not take a second step toward home plate. Table tennis. Carla Prince and Sloane Wallace are playing table tennis under ITTF rules. Wallace returns to serve, and her shot bounces high in the air off Prince's side of the table. Prince, who is much shorter than Wallace, reaches the ball by putting her free hand on the table and boosting herself into the air, which enables her to swat the ball back. Wallace can't return the shot. She complains that Prince isn't allowed to put her hand on the table. Who gets the point? Answer, Wallace. A player is awarded a point if her opponent's free hand touches the playing surface. Wrong sport. In a hockey game between the Charlotte Schnauzers and the Dayton Dachshunds, the Schnauzers are on offense. A Charlotte defenseman gets the puck at the point and takes a shot, which ricochets awkwardly off the Dayton goalie's pads, bouncing up into the air. Schnauzer's forward, Malcolm Jordan, bats the puck out of the air with a baseball swing, scoring. The Dachshunds players protest that Jordan's stick wasn't on the ice. Does the goal count? Do 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 do. The goal counts as long as Jordan's stick has remained below the level of the net's crossbar. Trivia challenge. Western Michigan needed 7 overtime to beat Buffalo 71-68 on October 7th in the highest-scoring game, 139 points, in NCAA FBS history. The previous record, 137, was set last year in regulation. Which two teams played in that game? Was it A, Texas and Oklahoma, B, Pittsburgh and Syracuse, or C, Clemson and Alabama? Do, 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 do. The answer, Pittsburgh defeated Syracuse 76-61. And now we'll go to the January issue 2018. Picture here of Chloe Kim. Winter Olympics preview. Snowboarding sensation Chloe Kim is going for the gold. Let's go to Who's Who in Sports, page 8. Top line. Shalane Flanagan, distance runner, United States. Her height is 5'5". Her weight is 113 pounds. She was born July 8, 1981 in Boulder, Colorado. Flanagan won the women's race at the 2017 New York City Marathon, 2 hours, 26 minutes and 53 seconds, to become the first American to win since 1977. She crossed the finish line 61 seconds before the next competitor, three-time defending champion Mary Kitney of Kenya. In 2014, Flanagan ran the Boston Marathon faster than any American woman in the event history, 2 hours, 22 minutes and 2 seconds, seventh place. Her 14th Berlin Marathon time was the second fastest raised by an American woman ever, 2 hours, 21 minutes, and 14 seconds, third place. Question, at which school did Flanagan win 2 NCAA cross-country championships? Do, 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 do. Answer, the University of North Carolina. Next, we have Jalen Brunson, point guard, Villanova. His height is 6'3". His weight is 190 pounds. He was born August 31st, 1996 in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Brunson led the Wildcats with 4.1 assists per game in 2016-2017 as a sophomore and was second in scoring, 14.7 points per game. He was ranked first team all Big East. His first season at Villanova, Brunson started 39 of 40 games, made the Big East all-freshman team, and helped the Wildcats win the 2016 NCAA championship. A two-time Illinois Gatorade Player of the Year, Brunson was MVP of the 2015 Under-19 World Championship after helping Team USA win gold. Who is the coach of the Villanova men's basketball team? Do, 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 do. Did you say Jay Wright? If you did, you were absolutely correct. And finally, Kevin Bayard, free safety, Tennessee Titans. His height is 5'11". His weight is 212 pounds. He was born August 17, 1993, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Through week 13 of the 2017 season, Bayard second in the NFL. He led the league with 6 interceptions and was averaging 16.7 yards per return. He also had 45 solo tackles. He had 3 picks against the Browns in week 7, the first player to have that many in one game since Kurt Coleman of the Eagles in 2011. In 4 years at Middle Tennessee State, Bayard set school record for picks, 19, interception return for yards, 377, and return for TDs, 4. He was first-team all-conference twice. What city do the Titans call home? Do, 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 do. That would be Nashville. Now let's go to page 9, warm-up. The quiz. Say what? See how well you remember the zaniest coach of 2017. And here they are, two hockey players in the middle of the page. Icy conversation. Subban, 76, and Crosby, 87, must have exchanged words about something. The new year means new opportunities for athletes, coaches, and announcers to say things that are completely nuts. While we wait for the 2018 best head-scratchers to be spoken, however, take this quiz to test your memory of the most hilarious, shocking, and altogether puzzling utterances from last year. Number 1. P.K. Subban fibbed about his trash talk with Sidney Crosby in the Stanley Cup Finals, claiming that Crosby had complained about what? A. The taste of Nashville hot chicken. B. The length of Subban's playoff beard. C. The smell of Subban's breath. D. The color of Nashville's jersey. Do, 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 do. Answer C. The smell of Subban's breath. Number 2. Cam Newton accidentally compared the 2017 Panthers to which disaster? A. The Exxon Valdez oil spill. B. The Titanic. C. The Hindenburg. D. The 2016 Panthers. Do, 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 do. Answer B. The Titanic. Question 3. What was Michael Jordan talking about when he said, "The ceiling is the roof"? A. The top of his top floor of his house. B. The blueprint for a new Bulls arena. C. University of North Carolina football. D. No one really knows. Do, 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 do. Answer C, the University of North Carolina football. Number 4. After hitting a big shot to beat the Nets, Heat guard Dion Waiters said one of his favorite quotes was, A, be sure you put your feet in the right place, then stand firm, by Abraham Lincoln. B, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Wayne Gretzky. C, the ceiling is the roof, Michael Jordan. Or D, he forgot his favorite quote. Do, 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 do. The answer is D. He forgot his favorite quote. Number five. Washington State coach Mike Leach said which of the following when asked about aliens at a press conference? A, I don't know what they're little green men, and I don't know what they're specifically in our galaxy. B, I don't know that they'd be hostile mutants. C, they might look remarkably like us. D, all of the above. Do, 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 do. The answer, D, all of the above. Question six. About whom did Spurs coach Greg Popovich say, I'm going to use him like a bar of soap until there's nothing left? A, Manu Ginobili. B, Tony Parker. C, LaMarcus Aldridge. D, Mr. Soapy, the friendly bar of soap. Do, 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 do. The answer, A, Manu Ginobili. Question 7. What did Kyrie Irving say is not even a conspiracy theory? A, the moon is made of cheese. B, Bigfoot exists. C, the earth is flat. Or D, Elvis is alive. Do, 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 do. Answer, A, the moon is made of cheese. Number 8. Patriots coach Bill Belichick claimed he's not on which of the following non-existent social networks? A, Snapface and InstaChat. B, Chatbook and Twitter. C, FaceSpace and Kugler. D, Hopster and InstaFace. Question, answer, 8. A, not on SnapFace and InstaChat. 9. Before Eagles kicker Jake Elliott made a game-winning 61-yard field goal against the Giants, Carson Wentz was caught by a microphone saying he'd do what if the kick was good? A, name his firstborn Jake. B, give Elliott his paycheck. C, make his bed. D, get a tattoo. Answer, B, give Elliott his paycheck. And finally, who did Fox Sports analyst Alexi Lalas call a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires? A, One Direction. B, the U.S. Men's National Soccer Team. C, the United States Women's National Soccer Team. D, the editors of Sports Illustrated. And the answer, B, the U.S. Men's National Soccer Team. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. Talk about you and all the wonderful things that you and I can do. I popped some cash in a little bit of time. I showed some cash, then the girl was mine. I took her over town, I wined her and dined her. She asked me, did I like her? I said, well, kinda. All of a sudden, she jumped out of her seat, snatched me up by my wrist and took me out in the street. She started grabbing all over me, kissing and hugging.